Hi, everyone. Great to be with you again. Today, we're discussing Chapter 6, Conservatism and Postmodernism. We live, Dugin writes, in a unipolar world, represented by Western Europe and the United States. For this pole, the significance of human history consists in progress toward freedom. In modernity, man frees himself from superstitions and arbitrary authority. In post-modernity, man begins to free himself from himself, and in this process, he is delivered into ceaseless distraction and amusement. Here the question arises, which we've already seen underlies the impetus toward a fourth political theory. Can post-modernity be opposed, and if so, how? Are we free if we cannot freely say no to freedom as liberal modernity and post-modernity understand it? For instance, can we say no to the products of technological advancement, to, for example, the washing machine? For a liberal society, it's almost sacrilege to believe that life, even a happy life, is possible without the washing machine, as he writes on page 85 when he talks about the metaphysics of the washing machine. You have to see what he's saying here, the implicit imperative to have the latest technology. And the idea that if you're not free to say no to that, then you're not really free. For a liberal society, freedom does not include the freedom to say no to liberalism. That is the paradox of freedom, or at least it shows the constraints of having to think that freedom is the highest value. In the bottom paragraph of page 85, Dugin relates the dominance of liberalism on one hand to what he calls the destiny of the logos on the other. Here's what he writes. The idea is contained in liberalism that there can be no alternatives to it. And there's some truth in this. If logos puts itself on the path of freedom, if the social logos was pulled into the adventure of total liberation, where was the first shove, push, or impulse in this direction? In other words, what impulse lies behind the idea that society must be a progressive and total liberation? It must be sought, he says, not in Descartes, Nietzsche, or the 20th century, but back with the pre-Socratics. Heidegger saw this moment in the concept of phusis, that's the Greek word that we roughly have at the basis of physical, phusis, or its Latin translation, nature, but Heidegger says all of the translations miss the mark of what the Greeks meant by that word. Let me say again, here Heidegger saw this moment in the concept of phusis, and in the way it was disclosed in Plato's teaching of the idea. So you may have heard even roughly, Plato has a doctrine of ideas or something like that. For Heidegger, Plato's doctrine of ideas or the notion of phusis, these early philosophical discoveries, set forward, as it were, here in Dugin's retelling, a chain of events that could not but culminate in this situation. So what's important for our purposes is that the movement of logos to freedom, this adventure of total liberation, is not accidental, and yet one can say no to it. What then can we say is the origin of liberalism, according to Dugin, on the basis of this passage? It's the ancient being historical drama, the drama of being's own history in Western philosophy. Liberalism is a necessary episode in that drama, but although it's necessary, we're not fated to remain under its dominion. We have a word in the matter. We can say no. Let me just add here as well. You might think this idea that it is a destiny, that it's somehow necessary, even though he's emphasizing here that we can say no to it, implies unidirectional progress. First, I want to invite you to think about whether or not that's the case, especially as we go through a couple of varieties of conservatism here that'll give you a chance to think about that, as well as later chapters on the ontology of time and things like that. I want you to see, does this idea of a being historical drama or a process from the first beginning that leads to its end imply unidirectionality or one kind of temporality? Something to think about for yourselves as you begin to really grapple with the notions that underlie Dugin's fourth political theory. Back to the text, though. On the top of page 86, Dugin calls the ontological possibility of saying no the beginning of conservatism, which is a no said to that which is a round one. So the possibility of saying no is the beginning of conservatism. Now, for a few reasons, that might strike you as a strange definition of conservatism. You might think that the conservative is the one who wants to preserve what is here now, conserving it from change. In what sense is it conservative to want to reject the present? Now, this may be obvious to some of you, may not be obvious to some of you. Let's see what Dugin says about it. If the present is characterized as a progressive present, then saying no to the present can be essential to conservatism. And because Dugin has analyzed the present as postmodern post-liberalism, conservatism is defined in opposition to postmodern post-liberalism. So what is our present? It's the present of postmodern post-liberalism. Conservatism is rejecting our present. It's saying no to it. It's saying no to the march of progress. And it's saying no to the specific configuration in which we find ourselves, postmodern post-liberalism. Conservatism is the pursuit, Dugin writes, of an ontological, philosophical, sociopolitical, individual, natural, religious, cultural, and scientific position that repudiates our liberal status quo. Conservatism, Dugin continues, builds its position on an opposition to the logic of the unfolding of the historical process. Conservatism opposes historical time. Now, this is going to be an absolutely crucial idea in this chapter. If you think back to the chapters that we read on unidirectional progress and on the monotonic processes, conservatism means the rejection of that kind of progress. As he wrote on page 66, the fourth political theory must take a step toward the formulation of a coherent critique of the monotonic process. It must develop an alternative model of a conservative future, a conservative tomorrow built on the principles of vitality, roots, constants, and eternity. And now in chapter 6, Dugin will start to describe and assess some of the alternative conservative models. So just to say that once more briefly, conservatism is opposing unidirectional historical progress, but we don't yet know what it is going to put into its place. And that's why with this section, Dugin begins to go through a variety of different conservatisms and presents to us their attitude towards time. First, let's just say what they are. The conservative models that he's going to run through are the following: fundamental conservatism, liberal or status quo conservatism, the conservative revolution, left-wing conservatism, and Eurasianism, as well as neo-Eurasianism.